welcome back to the show. How did you find the Lincoln-inspired setup, or would you like to talk about square plates?
Oh, I think we've done that.
Yes.
We did that subject months ago.
I know.
But now everyone else is doing it.
Yeah, precisely. The Telegraph, all the rest of the bits and pieces there. It's just, it was too much. So what does the show, what does the day have in store for your good self as you tootle off at our normal 9:30 time to do something more exciting? If that is possible.
Only that I have to go to Western House, where Radio 2 is, to broadcast on Radio Berkshire from 10.
Well, there we are, you see. But I do like the line, as you can see, facial book chums. There is very little quite as exciting and glamorous as a trip to Lincoln and to participate in the cultural phenomenon that is Lincoln-inspired. Fantastic.
I thought it was a nice gathering. I think those who came enjoyed themselves. Of course, the Katie Grimason mug was the highlight of the event. So,
Holly's
the
just remarked on that,
extremely
actually.
Extremely exciting.
Yeah. Holly, who's recovered from your slight against mini cheddars, I think it's fair to say. Holly, I mean, it took some time and a lot of therapy.
Who slighted mini cheddars?
You slighted mini cheddars.
I love mini cheddars.
But not in a school children's lunchbox. I think that was the line.
Oh yeah, sure.
Yes.
But I mean, though, it's part of a balanced diet. You know, you need to put some apples in there. I was visiting a school. It's a Catholic primary school in Northampton the other day, and my work as an ambassador for Beanstalk, which is something we should talk about, which is basically helping young kids with literacy skill difficulty. And the head teacher there was telling me about how he sometimes has to educate the parents about what is actually a lunch, and which is why, you know, it's important to get free school meals, because then you know that across the board you're going to be feeding people with a standard lunch that's going to have all the nutrients that you need in order to be able to concentrate, sleep well, etc., etc. Anyway, and he was saying that, you know, Pepperami and a bag of crisps and a chocolate bar, or maybe mini cheddars, is not quite the nutrition that you need for a little person. But it doesn't mean to say that I don't like attacking my mouth with very large volumes of mini cheddars, and I used to quite like the crinkly ones. Yeah.
And as we said on your latest Facebook update, excellent news seemed to have squeezed out another 800 words of the subject of the square plates, as the Telegraph actually run with this: surrender your square plates and we can dine in dignity. That's pretty much the sort of statement. As you rightly said, William, we kind of broke the news story a few weeks ago. The campaign was there. Haven't quite got there with the juices yet, but it's only a matter of time. I'm sure.
Well, yeah, I managed to, I think, looking at that piece in the Telegraph, did I manage to mention the juices? Yes, I did.
Oh,
you looking at? I've attacked the fact any juicing machine that requires twice as much time to wash out the dozen component parts than it does to make the teeth rotting smoothie in the first place. And you'll notice how on the pulse I am, because what's the front page of the news of the Telegraph today? It's about don't give yourself more than one glass of juice a day.
Precisely.
Because there is a sort of fad at the moment of loading yourself up with smoothies and juices, which of course actually means you're taking in far too much sugar.
And that is the reason why William Sirtwell compliments the healthy attitude to Siren 107.3 FM so splendidly. But I can see the taxi is awaiting. The carriages are actually there. Everything else is ready to actually whisk William off to that other sort of BBC scenario there, which is wonderful stuff. So what are the last two questions? Holly?
Sorry, in the picture of you with square plates debate,
yes.
I love the fact that they've just sneakily put a round plate on as artwork behind you.
That is a very beautiful, that was shot in our office, and that is an image from an old cover of Waitrose Food Illustrated, which is what Waitrose Kitchen was evolved
if ever there was a tease to actually say, come, let us do a location or outside broadcast report live from William Sitwell's office, it is that image, I think.
With the wonderful green walls.
It is the wonderful green walls. Very healthy. Very much in keeping with our sister station, Southside Broadcasting on Siren FM. Last two questions, Holly, please.
Have you had fun talking to us today?
I think a bit of sunny chat, yeah.
And we look forward to talking to you again, yes?
Well, you know, I've got no choice. I'm sorry I'm not with any of my... I'm sort of with Greg Wallace or someone more interesting this morning.
Hey, now, William, you are the William Sitwell. Of course, literary connection, Dame Edith Sitwell.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
yes.
And more. So, you know, just a whole matter of times, that, as we like to say.
The finest in gourmet criticism and foodie delights. And the author of A History of Food in 100 Recipes. Quite clearly a question of quality personified. It's William Sitwell on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Catch that taxi now, William. Go for it. Go! never enough. So we started off with Minty Steed at York Racecourse, and we proceeded to move down the line with Richard Fitzwilliams, and of course talked about the National Portrait Gallery and National Portrait Painters and Frank and a whole range of other factors, including a movie that you won't be seeing because it's got Jesse Eisenberg in it. Is that right, Holly?
Yeah, but it's personal taste. I'm sure.
Exactly, each to their own, quite rightly. So,
I'm sure he does a great job.
Quite rightly. We started this hour, of course, following Ian Lennox with Alan Stevens, and we kind of left in that sort of wonderful Forest of Dean-esque moment, a kind of climax before we actually took the Simon and Garfunkel story and the William Sitwell moment, obviously served on a round plate in deference to William, as always you, with the line that Rebecca Sharratt seemed to be in the lead in terms of, obviously, yes, we will hopefully feature all of the fine folk who were recommended by the dynamic duo that are Caldor City's Finest, Fiona Moore and Alan Stevens, in their due deputised roles as contributors. But it looks, Fiona, as though it's Rebecca Sharratt who's currently in the lead to be our first choice in terms of who do we go to out of this fabulous list.
Oh, good.
Nice. So, the next question we need to put to you is apropos of Fien Heel, our Belgian graduate who's currently cycling from Miami to Vancouver. And when she gets to Vancouver, she'd like to actually purchase a dog to hopefully sort of help her, a bit like the littlest hobo, en route. She cycles across Vancouver and Canada and so on. It's wonderful. If not, possibly sane. But she is from Belgium. Bless her. Now, it has been suggested a Dalmatian is a possibility by Minty Steed. This is interesting. Line that, or you know, but she doesn't want a tiny, she doesn't want a chihuahua, and of course, bearing in mind that she is going to be on a bicycle at the same time, you don't want those little legs. Although you could go in a basket, as we said last night. As a Canadian, have you any thoughts as to suitable doggies that might be deemed appropriate for this grand venture when she gets across the border?
Not as a Canadian, I have to say, I don't think a Dalmatian would be a great choice.
Because having
known them, they're nice dogs, but they're kind of a little bit inbred and kind of not really that intelligent, and they're a little high maintenance.
There you have it. Yeah.
Harsh,
but then again, that's what Royal Holloway College employs you for in many ways when you're marking scripts.
I'm trying not to be harsh. to be honest, if you want a good dog to bike with, I think you'd probably be best going for, say, a German Shepherd cross or possibly a Husky cross.
Yeah.
You know, something large, but that's smart enough to follow with you and, take the initiative a little bit if it needs to.
I think a Husky cross was one which was a possibility.
Yeah, the Pomsky.
The Pomsky, yes, which is a Pomeranian Husky, is it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. They're really expensive, yeah. Though.
As you know, Fiona, we like to provide a little bit of personal health service and lines for that. And obviously, if you're going to go into Canada, then clearly Pomeranian Husky is the way to go. And I appreciate, Fiona, hopefully this hasn't caused any hassle with respect to Aishan Zhukov. That's why we didn't put the question to Alan. We thought it might be just too much, really, with respect to, obviously, cats and dogs. The real reason...
I think our cats are secure in their
catitude. Good. That's good to hear. That's very good. Now, moving on... Sci-Fi London 2014 has wrapped. Overall, lots of positive lines here. Time Lapse, as we say, probably your favourite film of the whole festival. Is that something you still agree with now? Time has lapsed since you've actually seen it.
It was interesting. It was Alan's absolute favourite film. No question, hands down.
Yeah.
I would say with me, my favourite is split between Time Lapse and Bunker 6, because I also thought Bunker 6 was fantastic.
Yeah, I won't show you. Influenced, of course, by Jacob's Ladder and The Shining.
Yep.
And produced, of course, by Rebecca Sharratt, who we'll be looking to feature, is articulate and sort of from there. So,
very clever film.
Was it, why should Holly go and see Bunker 6 then?
It's a good question in that I'm afraid I've just met Holly, so I don't really know much about her film
preference. Excellent. Okay, let's do a breakdown. Holly, finally an English student, okay?
Yep.
Took the science fiction module with me last year, so worked through from that perspective. Scored a fine, mighty fine result, as far as I recall, in terms of the essay you submitted, which was on?
The Phoenix. I was talking about Fahrenheit 451 and Neuromancer, and talking about the Phoenix symbolism and rising from the ashes of a complacent society.
So,
and there you go.
proving that she's capable of remembering the topic of an essay she wrote last term clearly has got some sort of ability in terms of actually coordinating that. She's also doing a postgraduate MA starting at the University of Lincoln in September. But
congratulations!
There we are. You see, exactly. So does that help at all? Oh, she also sings. Yeah. She sings in the barbershop quartet, and she's from York.
Chorus.
Chorus, exactly. Barbershop, quite right. Barbershop, yeah. Right. Does that help for you?
Yes. Well, the thing is, I would say that the best genre films, the best horror, sci-fi, and fantasy films, are films that aren't, you know, where the sci-fi element isn't, you know, just there for the sake of the sci-fi element, as it were. Mm-hmm. It's where it's used as a tool to talk about something more in the human experience. And I would definitely say Bunker 6 is one of those films. You know, the premise, the idea that the nuclear bomb went off in the 60s and now, you know, here you've got these survivors in this one bunker, is actually just the backdrop to tell essentially a psychological horror story about the people in the bunker. And although, you know, the publicity said it was low budget, and if you think about it, it couldn't have been anything but low budget, this isn't the sort of film where you notice something like that. You know, you just kind of get caught up in the details. And one thing that I thought was very clever was there's certain bits which, as you watch the film, the first time you see them, you think they're mistakes. You know, there's certain things, you know, or details where you're sort of like, well, that's a bit peculiar, you know, why is that happening? Why is she dressed like that? You know, what's his story? Where did he come from? Sort of thing. And then, you know, kind of when there's a twist, which I'm trying not to give away, as I mentioned on the blog, and there's a twist which I don't want to give away. But the thing is, once the twist happens, suddenly all those mistakes aren't mistakes.
Right.
You know, all those bits of strangeness aren't just strangeness. They all suddenly make a lot of sense. And you sort of I was sitting outside the film afterwards going, oh, that's why this, that's why that. You know, that explains so much, you know. So, you know, I love a good film like that. And, you know, I mean, your tastes may, if your tastes are tending clearly towards, more towards cyberpunk, because then it's not really a cyberpunk film, but, you know, as a story, it's a very good story.
Okay, yeah, no, I think I'll definitely give it a watch. Actually, yeah. My boyfriend's just texted me saying he saw it ages ago on Indiegogo. So that seems like it's probably something.
Well, when
to
you
watch.
Talk about ages ago, I mean, are we talking about millennia?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know.
Ages are relative.
Yeah, precisely. Well, in which case, you know, we'll obviously be looking to discuss that and more with the producer Rebecca Sharrett, who I gather was quite articulate from what Alan was saying in terms of obviously the Q&A afterwards.
In that didn't just go dunno.
We might have had an American accent. Is she a New Yorker? Is she a Californian? Do we get any background into Rebecca Sharrett's scenario? I mean, obviously we could check this online, Fiona.
I would expect that she's from Nova Scotia, considering it's a Canadian film made in Nova Scotia, and most of the team seem to be kind of part of the general Nova Scotia film industry.
Well, which is fantastic.
You know, we were having a bit of a laugh about it afterwards because, you know, there's a couple of things that Nova Scotia is known for film-wise, slightly unfairly, but, you know, it's the Trailer Park Boys, Hobo with a Shotgun, and Lex.
Yeah.
There are many other films do exist, but in terms of if you ask people what things were made in Nova Scotia, that's what you'll hear.
Lex, was that the series, or was that just the sort of movie Lex? Because there was a series called L-E-X-X.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Yes,
it started off as telemovies, but then eventually they did a series.
The dark side of Star Trek in many ways.
I was recently trying to explain it to a friend, and I basically said, imagine if Blake 7 was reimagined by Lars von Trier, and you've got the general idea.
There you have it, yeah. Without the nymphomaniacs, although I don't know.
No, remember, one of the main characters in Lex is a reformed sex bot.
Quite right, you're quite exactly so. So, you know, those Scandinavians and their long winter's nights, very strange.
Yep.
So has the fantastic character from the short sequence, who would be Venus Ganymede, has she kind of dropped away from the sort of number one list? I mean, has Venus been subsumed by the likes of Bunker 6 and Time Lapse?
No, Venus. Cooking with Venus is still the best film of the festival. She was fantastic. you know, as I said, I don't know how they managed to pack such brilliance into 2 minutes, but they did.
Well, there we are. So Venus Ganymede can rest assured. We didn't have a chance when we were talking with our culinary expert, William Sitterwell, to talk about Venus Ganymede, but it'll happen next week, you know. I wonder, where does she sort of consider the square plate, round plate
scenario? Yes, because I wonder what plate she uses.
Oh. big debate here, Fiona, in terms of what do you prefer? William has quite clearly said, look, the Earth is round, naturally things are round, we should always eat our food off round plates, not square plates. We go square plates, it's unnatural.
I have to say I've never given it much thought, but thinking about it, well, pretty much all the plates in our house are round. So,
good answer.
Clearly we tend towards William's opinion.
Yeah, well, that's always, it's important, because, you know, square-plated folk somehow...
Do you have square plates in our cupboards? Yeah, for dinner parties and stuff like that.
Yeah, but the very fact you have to use the fingers to use inverted commas for dinner parties.
Well, I know it sounds a bit... posh, doesn't it, when you're like, we use square plates at dinner parties, but
and I
thought, that's what
it's so strangely, comments, strangely evocative of the 1970s, the dinner party. Never mind, it's just working the whole setup from that point of view. I was sharing with a colleague recently, Fiona, in fact, Christopher Marlowe from this very institution, the University of Lincoln, about our development that we're looking to put together for a science fiction themed event next year, a symposium, probably around about May time, etc. And I cited your good self as somebody who had contributed with time and relative dissertations in space, wearing your anthropological hats to obviously Doctor Who and more. I don't know if you've got any questions, Holly, you'd like to sort of push to Fiona about her own sort of take on science fiction, how she squares that with her day-by-day work as one of the top folk at Royal Holloway University College.
Actually, I wanted to know what your... I know it's a difficult one to try and pin down in
a
minute,
it's almost 10 to 10 in
what's
the morning coat.
One of your top either films or books, actually, of sci-fi?
So what are my top films? You mean in terms of my favourites, or in terms of in what sense, the top films?
In the sense of your personal taste, which one do you like?
It's a good question. It's one that I tend to find a little hard to answer, because there are so many films I consider excellent films that it's a lot of what I'm inclined to put at the top of the list tends to depend on you know, my mood or what I've seen fairly recently.
Well, say one that you walk in the room and you look at your DVD rack or whatever, and you the one that you will always, without fail, you can always watch it.
Well, again, there's no films of that kind because it really depends on my mood. But I will say, in terms of you know, films I think are great and films I would recommend, you know, Metropolis is usually somewhere in the list. In fact, almost inevitably. And I really recommend the new edit they've done with the
recently
discovered.
Nearly 90 years old, though, Fiona. Nearly 90 years old.
What the new edit is.
Well, no. another film I frequently recommend is the Ring of the Nibelungen, and to be honest, that's you know, good few years older.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, you can't beat the first Men in the Moon for you know, experimental filmmaking.
Indeed, classic stuff, etc. So does that help, Holly?
Yeah, sure. I'm writing them down. Thank you very
much. Brazil is usually one that tends to come close to the top of my list. Blade Runner.
Oh, I've heard that's good, Brazil.
Brazil is very good. Again, if you're interested in cyberpunk, you really should see Brazil. It's kind of made around the same era that Gibson was you know, writing his initial work, and you can kind of really feel the zeitgeist, the influence of the film noir on kind of, you know, the techno anxiety, if you like, of the day.
Yeah.
Cyberpunk, steampunk, and Robert De Niro as a superhero. What's that
to
appreciate?
Yeah, that's there are so many, and there's so many. It can be worth reading about the behind the scenes stuff, because there's so many lovely and stories in there, and so many frustrating ones. I mean, one of them being that De Niro just, you know, who was at the top of his game then, pretty much volunteered to do the film because he thought it was a fantastic idea. And this is the time when the studio were desperately trying to get rid of it.
Well, isn't that Terry Gilliam's life story as a director? You know, I mean, even his sort of Sancho Panza scenario is still sort of suffering. But, you know, his parallax theorem is ticking over, so he's still hanging on in there. And, of course, there is the Python reunion.
Yeah, are you going to go see that? In the cinema, at least.
Well, actually, we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, I was very negative there. I said no to start off with, and I've now rephrased that. But I did the same thing on the show last night, Fiona, when we were talking about the Polish entry to the Eurovision Song Contest. So I started.
Oh my God! What did you make of that?
Well, I think it was an interesting comment on postmodern feminist structures in the 21st century.
You didn't see it as the birth of Slav Hop?
I think Slav Hop is a great. We will look to actually sort of appreciate that with Cleo. In fact, I already sort of, even though I thought I'm never going to play this ever again in the whole sequence, I'm sensing that Donatin and Cleo with We Are Slavic is possibly going to replace the Moody Blues as our outro on the show today. I know, this is tough, but there we are. Fiona, it is that time of the year where as wonderful academics, we're just sorting our way through dissertations and all sorts of other fun things and so on.
Oh, yeah.
How's life at the Royal Holloway Base? Are there times when you just begin to despair? Think, didn't you learn nothing from the years you've spent with us?
Well, at the moment I'm celebrating because one of my doctoral students just passed his upgrade paper.
Hey, congratulations.
Congratulations.
So, yes. He can now officially go out into the field and do his research. So, yes, we're all cheering for him.
Would you like to give him a name check? Can we do that? You know, I mean, share the whole thing so he actually gets a name check. And then you can play the podcast back and say, look, you know, that's how much we celebrate.
Okay, well, shout out to Stefan Kromer, currently in Korea, doing research at the University of Korea and about to start his field work in a couple months' time.
Well done, Stefan. Congratulations. Curious career, because I was acting as an examiner for a student's PhD stuff from Korea at the University of South Wales earlier this year. Last year. It's strange and bizarrely wonderful. Anyway, enough of such fun and frivolity and such like stuff. Would you like to throw those last two questions at Fiona Moir? Please, Holly.
Have you had fun talking to us today?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
And would you like to come back?
Oh, of course.
Yay! Or wonderful. As Donatin and Cleo might say...
Yay!